Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll free, 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live Friday edition. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and very happy to be back here behind the microphone. Thank you so much to Jerry Usher, who did a fantastic job and always makes me nervous when he does such a fantastic job, although I know he's got his own day job. He's not coming back. However, I did enjoy my time off, and I'm very grateful that Jerry was willing to step in. All kinds of good news about last week's pledge drive, and we still, however, a week out, don't have a final number to give you, so we'll probably have to wait until Monday, but thank you again for your fine support. Our regular listeners will be aware that this year marks the 50th anniversary of the most controversial church document of the modern era, Humanae Vitae. Coming as it did at the very most feral moment of the sexual revolution, Humanae Vitae's reaffirmation of the church's teaching against artificial contraception was greeted with derision. But 50 years on, it looks more and more prophetic, and to many young people, not just prophetic, but appealing. As part of our year-long commitment to the reconsideration of Humanae Vitae, we take this hour to examine its understanding of the human person, and the contrast this understanding makes with much of modern thought. If you'd like to discuss Humanae Vitae with us, 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. Our guest this hour is Father Sebastian Walsh. Father Walsh is a Norbertine canon of the Abbey of St. Michael in the Diocese of Orange, California, where he's a professor of philosophy for the seminary program. After completing his studies at Thomas Aquinas College in California, he continued studies at the Catholic University of America in Washington, D.C., receiving a license in philosophy. Later, he attended the Pontifical University of St. Thomas in Rome, the Angelicum, where he received a master's in sacred theology and a doctorate in philosophy. Father Sebastian Walsh, thanks so much for being here with us to discuss Humanae Vitae.
My pleasure, Cy. Thank you for having me.
So 50 years, that's most of our life.
In fact, it's the year before I was born.
So I'm older than you. All right. Well, older, but at least far less accomplished. So you grew up then. Your formative years, as mine were in that period where there was just a great deal of disputation about Humanae Vitae. I wonder what you learned about contraception and all that as a young man coming up. I don't know if you went to Catholic school, but was the confusion there as well? What was your experience?
Well, I wasn't even raised Catholic, so Humanae Vitae was not even on my radar screen early on in life. I mean, I wouldn't have heard about it as a small child, obviously, but I suppose the first time that the issue of contraception came up, where I heard about it and I was sort of had some early formative ideas about it, was when I was in my early teens. And at that time, I had just converted. I became a Catholic when I was 13 years old. And there were so many things about the teaching of the Catholic Church that I didn't know. I was just a young kid, and I just had some vague ideas about things. And I probably would have told you something like what the average American Catholic in the parish would have said, something like, well, you know, if your conscience says it's okay, then it's okay, and you know, we don't want a rule-based religion, or something like that. I probably would have, you know, used some platitudes like that. And it was actually through a very traditional Catholic family that had 17 children, so you can believe they were not using a birth control. And not only that, they read the part of Humanae Vitae that said responsible parenthood, first of all, means generosity in bringing forth new life. So they had 17 kids, and I'll have you know, every one of those kids grew up to be a practicing Catholic, and not one of them lives in destitution. They are all providing well for their families this day. And so they were a witness, a counter-witness, a kind of a living embodiment of the best of Humanae Vitae. And so I had from that experience of that family a very clear idea of the fact that Humanae Vitae works in the modern world. And it was through that family and through talking to them, especially the father and the mother, that I came to the conviction, first of all, I understood that the church taught not only that contraception was wrong, but also that generosity in having children was good. And I also saw it at work, and so I believed it could work. So that was kind of a turning point for me. I guess I would have been in my mid to late teens at that point.
You know, I was raised in a Catholic family. I have six brothers and sisters, and my parents also rejected the contraceptive mentality. But I've sometimes wondered. I haven't asked them about this, but I know that this in other people's case. It wasn't just that the kind of negativity with which Humanae Vitae was received. It did, in fact, lead a whole generation to just question the church's teachings. But it left a lot of folks, and I wonder if maybe you even know about this family that you're describing, with a lack of support, having already come to accept the church's teaching and be living it out in procreation and raising of their children, to now have the church be going, well, maybe, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's funny because the one place where they felt they could have support was from the Holy Father. But from the local bishops and the local priests, they really struggled greatly. I remember they had to pull their kids out of Catholic school two or three times over the course of their, you know, raising their children, which was sad. You know, to tell a story, a kind of a sad collateral damage story, I knew a family from the same parish that had, I think, seven kids. And the local priest at the parish basically counseled them to start using contraception because they had so many kids and they were frazzled about it. And so the local priest was the one who told them it was okay. And then within a year, they were divorced. It was the saddest thing. And, of course, you know, it had its damage on the kids and so forth. And so, anyway, that's, you know, the flip side of it that, you know, in Humanae Vitae, one of the things Pope Blessed Paul VI said was he was trusting his priests. And that's exactly where the church seemed to fail. The priests themselves abandoned the Vicar of Christ in many places in that early time, you know, right after the publication of Humanae Vitae. And so this family really did feel a lack of local support. And I think it's interesting because I remember many times the patriarch, the father in that family, saying, you know, having to say the priest was wrong in the pulpit today, which is kind of a sad thing that he had to say, but there are no vocations in the immediate family from their boys, 17 kids. And I think part of that is precisely because they didn't have the support of their local clergy, and their dad was having to correct their priests, which is really sad. It's much better today, I think, for most priests, especially young priests, but it was a time of, you know, of great trial for families, and it's sad that the priest could not support them in those times, many cases anyway.
Well, the underlying premise that the modern world, I think, proposes to us, as a matter of fact, really is triumphalist in proposing. This is an obvious truth, is that there's really no harm that comes from separating sex and procreation.
Yeah.
What is the kind of Humanae Vitae response to something that the modern world really almost feels like it's schooling us about? Come on, grow up, get with it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess I'd start with an analogy. Someone might say, well, there's no harm in separating pleasure from eating. You know, what if I, for example, only ate sugar-free foods and foods with no calories, and I just ate things that were pleasant, but never things that were healthy for me, right?
Mm-hmm.
You'd see after a fairly short time of, you know, a steady diet of diet sodas and sugar-free everything, where you're just seeking the pleasure, you would see fairly quickly that your health would start to decay, huh? And it's not as obvious with regard to sex, because the main thing that's harmed by separating sex from procreation is not so much the individual's health, though that sometimes can happen, but rather the good of the species and the good of the family. That's what gets harmed there. So nature uses pleasure as a bait to get us to do the things we're supposed to do naturally. That's why pleasure is there.
I never thought of that. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Father, but that is, so nature uses pleasure as a bait, right? You have to eat, so nature makes it pleasurable.
Exactly, right. And no one would think that the eating is for the sake of the pleasure. It's so clear that the reason why you experience pleasure in eating is precisely so that you'll have food that'll satisfy you and nourish you. And similarly for sex. You know, if I asked a young person and said, what's better, the momentary pleasure you experienced in sex or the child that came of it? What do you prefer, your child or that, you know, momentary pleasure? And every parent, you know, who has sanity will immediately right. answer, oh, of course, my child is a better thing. But we have this strange society where children are considered primarily as burdens, as something to be avoided, as if the only evil thing about sex now is children.
Yeah.
Now, when the primary aim of sex is a pleasure, and you don't consider children anymore a blessing and the greatest good that can come, think of the consequences of that, first of all, psychologically, for your family. Here you are at the most intimate time in the relationship between a husband and his wife, and you need protection. That's the euphemism they use for contraception. Protection. Well, who do you need protection from? Who's your enemy?
The baby.
Is it your children who are the enemy? Is it your spouse who's the enemy? How can you live a life of communion in your family?
Yeah.
When you treat your own children, when you treat your spouse as if they're the enemy and you need protection. The psychological consequences for that are, you know, irreparable. And then, of course, children are going to grow up later and they're going to find out that their parents use contraception. And then they're going to start thinking to themselves, gosh, I guess I was too much trouble to be worth it, you know. They'll start to have a low self-esteem and a view of themselves that, well, you know, there's not too much of a good thing here. So this idea of this, that children are a burden and to be avoided and an evil, how that can't affect your family life seems incontestable to me that it will, number one. Secondly, it teaches a lack of respect and self-control. You know, how's a man going to treat a woman? I'll tell you, you know, a beautiful story. A friend of mine's wife, you know, gave birth to their first child. This was many years ago. And she had a lot of suffering and pain, extremely difficult labor. And he told me after that, I never looked at my wife again the same way. I had such respect that she suffered so much to bring our child into the world. Now, let me ask you this. Has contraception brought men to respect women? I'll tell you, men treat women like chattel today because of contraception. They look at women, they think, pleasure for me. They don't look at women the way my friend looked at his wife and said, that is someone I deeply respect. And so when we start pursuing the pleasures of this world as if they're the greatest goods, we harm every relationship in our family and then in the society at large. I could go on and on, but those are two just clear examples of the harm that can happen.
888-318-7884 is the number. We're talking about Humanae Vitae, the 1968 encyclical letter from Pope Paul VI that engendered, I would suggest to you, more controversy, well, certainly in real terms, more controversy than any document ever published by the Church. Because that controversy was worldwide when it was published in the midst of the sexual revolution in 1968, essentially where Pope Paul VI said artificial contraception is not a path that is open to married couples in a moral sense. That is not a morally acceptable or available path. We've spent a long time, 50 years now, discussing it, but the discussion is certainly not over. But on this 50th anniversary, we keep coming back to it because it's very, very, very important. Father Sebastian Walsh is our guest. The number again, 888-318-7884. If you have questions or comments about Humanae Vitae, we welcome your call, 888-318-7884. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back after this on Catholic Answers Live.
This is Bishop Chad Zielinski from the Diocese of Fairbanks of Northern Alaska, and you are listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Do you subscribe to Catholic Answers Magazine? We hope, but if not, right now we've got a deal that you're going to love. We've reduced the price and thrown in a free digital subscription when you subscribe. That's right, subscriptions to Catholic Answers Magazine just got cheaper, $10 less on one-year subscriptions and $20 less on two-year subscriptions. And right now, when you purchase a subscription, you get a subscription to the digital edition added to your order for free. With a deal like that, it's the perfect gift for friends, family members, seminarians, your priest, even yourself. When you get right down to it, what other gift has the potential to touch hearts and reap eternal rewards? Log on today to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com and sign up yourself, your friends, and your family for a magazine that is bound to make a difference in their lives and the lives of those they meet. Share the faith. Defend the faith. Catholic Answers Magazine from Catholic Answers, the most trusted name in Catholic apologetics.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious mystic monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All mystic monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase mystic monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Do you want to end abortion, halt the attack on traditional marriage, and ensure religious freedom for ourselves and for our grandchildren? To do this, we must convert the culture. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a grassroots initiative that recognizes this need and takes it to the streets. If you're interested in peacefully sharing the gospel in your area, visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Very happy to be back behind the microphone after a few days off to visit one of my children in college. I am joined in studio by Erica
Oh, you almost
Olson.
Said it. You almost
I almost,
had
I
it.
Did. I almost said Erica Olson. You've been married like... two-thirds of a year now, and I'm still messing up your
last name. Yeah, almost half a year, and I mess it up myself. People ask me, like once a week, people are like, what's your name? I'm like, Erica Santana. Wait, no, that's not right anymore.
Well, you look like an Olsen, so that should...
Do I?
No, you don't. I think of Olsen as like blonde-haired,
blue-eyed. Nellie Olsen.
Nellie, right. whenever Erica is here, you know what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about that. Well, yeah, the Catholic Answers Conference in general. It's coming
up. I usually have some kind of event.
Yeah, September 27th through 30th here at the Hyatt Regency La Jolla. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Perfect time to come to. Our guest, I think the reason Erica's here is because our guest today is Father Sebastian Walsh, and he's usually there. Will you be there this year, Father?
I'm planning on it. I just got the dates from Erica, so I'll put that on my calendar.
And usually some other Norbertine priests come and they hear confessions.
They're so the best.
Right. And we do. I don't remember. Is it the left?
You're just saying that because they give out light penances. I know.
No,
that has
really,
not been my experience, Father.
Such,
I don't know if you've met any other Norbertines. But
I am such a Norbertine groupie. Can I just tell you? I like love you guys.
But how do you guys decide who's going to hear the confessions from the mortal sinners and who's going to hear it from the venial sinners? Do you guys draw straws?
We just don't differentiate. We,
oh, really?
We love all. We just accept.
Okay, good.
We have two different lines going.
We have two different lines, though, yeah. Faith and science, friends or foes, is the theme of the convention. Wonderful speakers. All of our guys will be there. Tim, Jimmy, Trent, and Carlo. Chris Check will be speaking. Father Hugh Barber will be... Well, is he giving a talk or is he giving
the homily
at Mass?
Yeah, he'll be the homilist, but we have two daily Masses plus the Sunday Mass,
yeah.
And he will be the homilist at all of them. Colonel Burke will be celebrating
Cardinal
Sunday.
Burke.
Yes.
Yes.
He'll be celebrating Sunday's Mass.
Mm-hmm.
He'll also be there, though, the whole weekend to interact with all of the attendees, and his keynote will be at the dinner Saturday evening.
Stacy Trisenkos will be there.
Yes.
The Dr. Stacy Trisenkos, chemist and theologian. Father Terrence Ehrman, who is one of the great voices on church and science,
mm-hmm,
today in the world.
Both guests on Catholic Answers Live frequently.
Right. I imagine there will be a good deal of talk about our topic today, Umane Vitae, and the
yes.
whole idea of the technologies that the world presents and the moral problems that arise from those.
Yeah, Cardinal Burke's keynote address at the dinner is specifically on that subject matter. So if you want to come hear him, buy the full conference ticket that includes the dinner. We also have a smaller talks only. If you only want to come to listen to the talks and not do the dinner, that's totally available.
Mm-hmm.
We have special early bird pricing going until July 2nd. So you have 2 months to get an early bird price. Anybody who registers before the early bird ends gets Jimmy Akin M&Ms.
Jimmy Akin M&Ms,
yes,
is worth the whole thing.
That's totally worth it. And he's also square calling on Thursday night to kick off the conference, yep, on that first
big giant
first
square
night.
Dance. Father, will you be there that first night?
Can, yeah, we will
count
you,
on
square,
you square dancing
with us?
Or no?
On Friday night?
On, yeah, Thursday night.
Oh, Thursday night.
Thursday night. Oh, no, no. Oh, I never square dance on Thursdays.
Or any other day of the week, I'm guessing.
Only Friday.
A completely true statement. What I just told you is a completely true statement.
What are you, a Jesuit? Well, I shouldn't say that. I'm just teasing. A special room rate of $149 a night, too, when you register before January. July 2nd. So
yes.
CatholicAnswersConference.com. CatholicAnswersConference.com is where you go. We really want to see you there. It's going to be just a giant, wonderful conference. I had the greatest time ever. Oh, also, we didn't mention we'll do the show live.
That's
from
right.
the conference floor,
yes,
as well.
And questions,
and
for
all
the
questions
show
will
from
come
the
from
audience.
The audience. Yeah.
It's going to be awesome. It's so fun.
And Erica will be the hype man for that.
I will. I'll have my signs, and I'll say cheer or boo.
Do you know what a hype man is, Father? Are you familiar with the term hype?
I do not know what that means.
That's probably
either,
all for the best for all of us.
I don't know what you're talking about, but I assume it had to do with my signage.
A hype man in modern usage is when you have a hip-hop performer, and there's another person with a microphone who hypes it up while that person is performing and provides the vocal.
Oh, wow.
Hype.
That person's called a
hype
man.
Hype man. Yeah, oh, okay.
Right. Got you. Okay. So, all right.
So I don't know what you've been listening to, Father. Too much Baroque music, probably. You need to mix in some hip hop.
I'm even like pre-Baroque. You know, I'm way.
That's right. You guys are pre. That's right. Exactly. Erica, thanks for coming in. You want to say anything else?
Thanks for having me. No, just have a great
You don't want to say this right here?
Make sure you register. Make sure you register at CatholicAnswersConference.com.
Okay. Thank you, Erica.
God bless you, Erica. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Father.
Father, we're talking about Umani Vitae. We have a whole bunch of callers, and I have some more questions for you, but I'll hold because so many people called. I don't want
to. I'll do my best to answer them. Yeah. Sure.
All right. Very good. Let's go to Carol in Butte, Montana. Carol, you are on with Father Sebastian Walsh. Your question, please.
Father, thanks for taking my call. I really would like to know, being from the generation that is Humana Vitae, I was born in 1960. Of course,
yes.
I saw feminism crop up in the fifth grade or so. What,
sure.
What are priests, especially from the pulpit, that you know of saying, or even in their personal life, if they hear a comment that's, let's say, sexually suggestive toward women or derogatory, you had talked earlier that happens, that women are like chattel. So
yes.
What are guys doing?
What are you asking? What are the priests doing in order to confront that? Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, or even your non-priest friends as well.
Yeah, okay. Well, there are a couple things I can think of. It starts with the way you raise sons. You know, the first thing that has to happen is that a son has to be taught how to respect his mother, and that's one of the jobs the father has. He's got to respect his mother, and so the father is the first one who gives that example. Let me just give a couple instances of how that works out in the concrete. So I have another dear friend who he says to me, when he comes home from work, he's got 10 kids, beautiful children. Of course, he comes home and his kids all run to see him and say hi. He says first, where's your mother? And he goes, makes a beeline for their mother first, and he gives her a kiss, and he hugs her and, you know, tells her he's glad to see her. And then he hugs the children. The children see that their father loves and respects their mother that way. And his wife, interestingly, told me something he never told me. She said, he never sits down unless I'm sitting down. If I'm working, like cleaning up after dinner, he's up cleaning and working until I'm done. And I just thought, those are great examples. When a husband shows respect to his wife, and then when his sons, for example, or speak disrespectfully or behave disrespectfully toward their mother, he disciplines them and say, that's not the way you treat your mother. You know, it's not the way you treat a woman. So it begins in the family there. If you haven't taught your sons how to respect their mother and their sisters, then obviously it's going to be you're working with damaged goods all the way forward, you know. So that's the first thing. I think from the standpoint of priests in the pulpit, that priests have not done a good job in defending women in the church. And part of that, I think, is because sometimes they're afraid. This is a problem when priests don't pray and they watch TV instead of praying. They've absorbed all the arguments from the TV and they feel incompetent to speak for women or to speak in defense of women. So a priest needs to, from the pulpit, to defend women and to speak about their dignity. And I think one of the problems of modern feminism, maybe at the end of the other end of the break I can talk about this.
Yes.
One of the modern problems of modern feminism is it treats men as if they're better than women.
All right, we do have to take a break, Father. Carol, hang on if you can. We'll finish that up with that. That's an important thought we'll get back to right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
Scripture and Tradition with Father Mitch Pacwa.
Is there anything in the tradition that is not found in the Scripture? And I said, yes. The table of contents. No book of the Bible writes down which books belong in the Bible. You only know it from the oral tradition from the apostles.
Scripture and Tradition with Father Mitch Pacwa. Tuesday, 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Television.
We live in an age of indifference. Does truth exist? Maybe. Is there a God? Who knows? Does it matter what religion you believe in? Probably not. If you think so, fine. I'm spiritual, but not religious. Apologist Matt Nelson says this indifference is the great spiritual sickness of our age, a product of the relativism that dominates our culture. And rather than remain indifferent, he did something about it. In his new book, Just Whatever, Matt looks at the different kinds of indifference you likely encounter in your friends and family members, and maybe in yourself, and offers an antidote to the problem that plagues our age. Order your copy of Just Whatever today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know that Catholic Answers Live is on TV? What began as a monthly series on EWTN in April of 2017 is now going to be coming to you on a weekly basis. You can catch Catholic Answers Live TV Saturdays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on EWTN, with an encore at 2:30 a.m. on Sundays. We'll also be available soon on Apple TV, Roku, and the Augustine Institute's multimedia platform, Form. Make a point of making Catholic Answers Live TV part of your weekly viewing, and we'll see you on the airwaves. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest is Norbertine Father Sebastian Walsh, and we are talking about Humanae Vitae. And this is an ongoing series that we're doing this year, and we will continue it throughout the year. 1968 was probably the peak year of the giddiness and even foolishness, one would say, of the sexual revolution. And it was also, in God's providence, the very year that Pope Paul VI released Humanae Vitae, or shared it with the world. It did not receive an immediate, grateful, and enthusiastic response in most quarters. In fact, it's been much derided. But it was right. The world was wrong. And that is something that we as Catholics must confront and face. The sexual revolution, by and large, has been a disaster, and we need some help. We're talking with Carol in Butte, Montana. Carol was asking Father, well, what are men doing about this to challenge people who speak in ways that kind of objectify women or overly sexualize a woman's role in the world? Father, you wanted to continue what you were saying with Carol.
Yeah, one of the things I want to talk about is one of the failures of certain kinds, or I don't know what else you call them, just versions of modern feminism, which basically make the tacit assumption that men are better than women, which is why women should try to become like men in every respect. You know, if you say what a woman needs to do is to become like a man, you're starting with the assumption that men are better than women. And, you know, so you need to cut your hair short. You need to wear men's clothes. You need to be free from the burden of childbearing. You need, as if that's a curse. And, you know, one thing after another, where everything that's good about a woman, her beauty, you know, the fact that she's a source of life and she, you know, she brings new life into the world, her gentleness, right? All those different elements that are so beautiful about women that that contribute so much to the good of our human race are minimized and treated as if they're weaknesses. And, you know, so that kind of feminism, you know, this adversarial model, you know, and which tacitly assumes that men are better than women, I think that does no good for women. And I also want to point out, a lot of the leading feminists in our country, I've noticed that they're married to men who are lechers. You know, and that should tell you something. It should tell you something. They're married to abusive men.
Yeah.
And so you have to say to yourself, are these really the women we want leading, you know, the interests of women in our country? I don't think so.
Carol, any response to Father?
Yeah, no, I can relate to that. I've had two relationships. I'm annulled from one marriage, and I'm just out of a common law situation. So, yeah, you know, it's made me reflect. I mean, from the beginning of this great radio program, it's really made me reflect.
Well, thanks. Carol, if I could ask you a question, I wonder if, I mean, the Christian defense of women is a defense that says every woman is a precious child of God, and that every woman's womanhood is a gift to her and to all of creation, and that every woman is our sister and to be treated thus. I think that a modern feminist will reject all of that. And so it's hard to, I mean, if you say, well, that's the basis on which we defend the dignity of women, and yet many, many women take offense at every bit of that. Carol, I wonder what you think about that.
No, I'm hearing you, and I'm picturing myself in the pews, and I'm the one that does wear the dress and wears the head, you know, mantilla, the lace scarf. And I'll hear men, maybe single men, maybe annulled like myself, maybe divorced, just to be friends with in my intention, and they'll start off a conversation after Mass with, you look really nice, or you look pretty, but instead of maybe they could say something like, wasn't that a great homily, or, you know, pick a point out of, you know, the reading.
Sure.
I just would like that more. I don't know if other women out there hearing this feel that way, but
I agree.
Equal, but yes, obviously made up differently, you know, physically.
One of the greatest blessings I've had in my own life was I was a student at Thomas Aquinas College, and there you have this kind of Socratic method where the students are interacting with each other, sort of arguing back and forth about points. And boy, did I learn how to respect women's intellects in that environment. It was really beautiful because largely what you were talking to the girls about were the things that came up in class. And you had such a vast array of common things to talk about, and it's almost like you didn't even notice that they were women from the standpoint that you were just talking to them about the same sort of thing you talk to a man about with regard to what's true, what's good, what's noble, what's beautiful. And then later you learn, after that friendship and that fundamental sense of your equality and dignity, then you learn to appreciate the other differences and what they bring that you can't bring. Huh? Anyway, so I completely agree with you that relationships between men and women need to start at a level that isn't sexualized from the beginning, and that's what our culture is so bad at. Our culture basically encourages young men to start off, you know, on the prowl or something like that. So,
and I almost feel, Father, you're saying that's not an advance, that's not a great advance of culture, that we've thrown off all of our inhibitions and now we're just free.
Yeah. Right, and men aren't afraid anymore because they know they can just go and use their contraception and then, you know, use a woman and leave her.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
They're not afraid anymore even of the natural consequences of sexual activity.
And this is exactly, actually, what was that the our great Pope, Paul VI, saw. This is exactly what he said would happen, and now it has happened, and still people say, oh, he was so backwards.
Yeah.
Let's go to John in St. Louis, Missouri, listening. Carol, thanks again for the call. John in St. Louis, Missouri, listening on 1080 AM. You are on with Father Sebastian Walsh. Your question, please.
Father Sebastian.
Yes.
In countries where, like the third world, where the consequences of having a lot of children are more dire, where women are have less rights.
Yes.
How do you answer the... I think some people just feel like it's more of a... they kind of understand the message of humanae vitae, and I guess in the first world, but it seems to them almost like we're putting women who are very, very poor with no rights, and also their kids who might actually be facing things like starvation and...
Sure. Yeah, let me...
Fair enough, John.
Thank you for that question. I want to tell you a story. I'm going to answer with a story, and then I'll come back to your question in more detail. Years ago, I think it was 1995, I attended a UN conference in Beijing. I was there as a part of an NGO, a non-governmental organization, assisting the Vatican delegation. And I remember the Vatican had proposed, together with a number of countries, to include in a list of occupations, for lack of a better word, that women should be encouraged to pursue. They had all these things like doctors and lawyers and everything like that, to include also mothers in the list, that motherhood was something to be pursued and valued. And there was a woman from West Germany who stood up and said, "Don't you understand? That's what this conference is all about. We don't want our daughters to grow up thinking they should be mothers." And then another woman got up. Her name was Dr. Margaret Ogola. I remember her very well. She was, I think, from Kenya, one of those third world countries you're talking about. But she was a doctor, and she had 6 or 7 children, I recall. And she said in her intervention, "I do not know why the woman from West Germany has a problem with her mother, but we think it's a regional difficulty, and so we move for inclusion of the language in the document." I was so struck by that. Other words, the idea that motherhood is a burden, and the fact that having many children is something that is to be regretted and somehow a prison or something, is part of that modern mindset. And for the most part, in third world countries, what you find is they're happy to have many children. I've many times spoken to women from third world countries, and they're always rejoicing over more children. And even in times when there's very, very grave situations where there's the threat of starvation and things like that, there are things that can be done and reasonable reasons to put off procreation. Obviously, natural family planning, which is very effective today, and Mother Teresa used to teach that in India and other, you know, third world countries, can be used in those situations. But for the most part, what I found is that it's first world people that are imposing that view that it's a huge burden to have children and not worth it, and it's keeping women in prison, so to speak. But I haven't found that experience at all when talking to third world women. They said, I remember Dr. Ogola said, "You know, from the United States, we have all this money, and you know what it's for? You go to a pharmacy in the third world, and there's only contraceptives on the shelves,
right.
No antibiotics. If they cared about us, they'd give us antibiotics." So anyway, I only say that because I think in some way we impose that view. And if you actually went and traveled in the third world, as I have many times, you won't find that view of motherhood as a burden and bearing many children as a curse or something like that in a prison for women.
John, can I suggest we did a show with Obianuju Ekeocha about when was that? It was not last Friday. Yeah, it was last Friday. It was last Friday we did that show. And she wrote a wonderful book called Target Africa, Ideological Neocolonialism in the 21st Century. And she's an African woman now living in the UK. And just listen to what she has to say. I think it's extraordinary. One of the things is we get into this circular reasoning where we have decided that the best thing for women is contraception. We go to African women, for example, and say, we're going to provide you with this contraception. African women say, we don't want contraception. We want babies. And then we say, well, that's because you haven't reached the developmental level that we have. We need to get you up to our level by getting you not to have babies. And so there's this point at which you say, well, all this multiculturalism is great, except as just so long as I guess we don't listen to the people that we're actually trying to be engaged in cultural exchanges with. It involves not listening to African women, not listening to women in Asia, basically not listening to women who haven't gone to Wellesley College. You know, that as long as you haven't gone to Wellesley College, then you don't know anything. And your view that babies are good is just a benighted, old-fashioned, oppressive view that's been sold to you. Anyway, that's what I feel like I get from Obi Enugu, and I hope you will get her book. Her full name is Obi Enugu Ekeocha, and the book is Target Africa. John, I have to say thanks for the call because it really is very greatly appreciated, John, but we have to take a break. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with more with Father Sebastian Walsh talking about Humanae Vitae on Catholic Answers Live right after this.
Bringing you the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
Hello, my friends. This is Christopher Check, president of Catholic Answers. I'm sure you have heard that it's still okay these days to hold to the quaint superstitions of Catholicism as long as you leave them in church. Because when it comes to reality, religion is just foolishness that withers in the fierce light of science. Problem is, this narrative is false. It is in the Christian West that scientific discovery has most flourished. Still, too many of us find ourselves flat-footed when confronted with bugbears like Adam and Eve versus evolution, creation versus Big Bang, and Galileo versus the Inquisition. What can you do? Come to Catholic Answers' 5th National Conference, Faith and Science. Guest speakers Father Terry Ehrman and Dr. Stacy Trasankos will join the whole Catholic Answers team to explain how faith and science are actually in harmony. September 27 to 30, right here in San Diego. And we are thrilled to announce a special keynote address by Raymond Leo Cardinal Burke honoring the 50th anniversary of Humanae Vitae. For all the details, visit CatholicAnswersConference.com.
Tim Staples here. Since May is the month of Mary and Mother's Day, I'm offering a great opportunity for you to help yourself, your family, and your friends to get to know our Blessed Mother more deeply than ever before. And to help make that happen, we're offering my book, Behold Your Mother, a biblical and historical defense of the Marian doctrines for only $9.95. Folks, that's over 45% off the regular price. From her Immaculate Conception to the Annunciation, from her title as Mother of God to her perpetual virginity, from her assumption into heaven to her role as co-redemptrix, I'll give you all the facts and back them up with solid biblical evidence in a way that's easy to read, remember, and understand. Make this May the month you, your friends, and your family grow closer to the Mother of the Church, our Mother Mary. To get your copies of Behold Your Mother, call 1-888-291-8000 or log on to the shop at Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kelt, your host. We're joined by Norbertine Father Sebastian Walsh. We're talking about Humanae Vitae, as we will do several times again throughout the year. We're going to keep coming back to this topic because, frankly, it's one of the most important in the world. The way I would put it, I wonder if you might put it differently, Father, but the modern world has come up with a false philosophy, a false idea of what a human being is. We might even say a false anthropology. A good deal of that is expressed in the sexual ethic of the modern world. It's breaking hearts. It's breaking families. It's leading people just to all kinds of hurt. And we can do much better. And that's what Humanae Vitae proposes, that we do better. 888-318-7884 is the number. Certainly, we can do better by women than we are now with this idea that the way to make a woman fully a woman is to have her check her fertility at the door, fill her body up with chemicals, and deal with the consequences therein.
It's horrible. Yeah, you're right.
I want to say also, I forgot to say this. Nick told me at the break, it was April 30th that Obi Enugu Ekeocha was on her book, Target Africa. So if somebody wants to go back on April 30th, and I love to pronounce her name. It's because I feel like it makes me so impressive on air that I can pronounce that name. So I'm happy to say it as many times as I can. Let's go to Ray in Denver, Colorado, listening on 1060 AM. Ray, you're on with Father Sebastian Walsh. Your question, please.
Hello, Father. Hey, I heard you make the comment that women, this causes women to be used as chattel, and Humanae Vitae says it'll be used, women will be used by men. But you guys give a pass to women all the time. Because isn't it the opposite true? Look what women do. They use men because they don't have to get pregnant. So they have multiple boyfriends, get husbands, multiple boyfriends because they're not going to have any offspring from them. And one of the most telling comments was Obi Anuju Ekiocho on Al Gresta's show when she said, this is just tip of the iceberg. Why do you Western women disrespect your husbands and men in public? Now, you can imagine what goes on in their personal life. But even you guys, you keep giving women a pass on their rotten behavior.
All right.
There's no responsibility.
Ray. First of all, never listen to the Al Cresta show. I don't know why you're doing that. No, I'm just kidding. We love Al. So Ray makes a very, certainly in very strong terms, so it makes an interesting point. Father, your response.
First of all, I don't want to act as if men are the sole cause of evil in the world or something like that, or men are, you know, the only problem or something like that. I do think that men and women both have a moral responsibility, and it's quite possible for women to make morally bad choices too. I absolutely think that. I do think, however, two things are true. I think men, for the most part, have a stronger natural inclination to initiate a sexual interaction. I think that's just natural for men, and so you'll see that happening more often, and men initiating the using women in a way that that's harmful to women. I think that happens more often. I also think that women themselves, interestingly, they suffer more the evil consequences of the use of contraception. You know, Cy was just making reference to the fact that they have to fill their bodies with chemicals, and the men, you know, there are no harmful physical side effects for men from the standpoint of, you know, dealing with, you know, things like chemical contraceptives and so forth. So I do think that's true. And I also think that men have a responsibility to initiate love and to take the forefront in protecting women. And so if we don't want to start this adversarial model of the relationship between men and women, like it's your fault, my fault, your fault. I'm just saying that I'm a priest and I'm a man. And so my first position is to tell the men out there to man up. You know, I mean, there's a great scene from, it's a book called My Antonia. I think it's Willa Cather.
It is,
And in it, this kid Jim, he kills a rattlesnake, you know, and Antonia, you know, is scared by it, and he kills it. And he said, for the first time, she respected me because he protected her. There's something iconic about that scene that just as a man learns to respect a woman when he sees her give birth and suffer to give life, a woman learns to respect a man when he protects her. And so from my perspective, I think you start like St. Joseph. The man's got to take the initiative. We've got to be the ones who start off upholding the dignity of women and respecting them. But at the same time, the caller has an excellent point, and that is it's not just men's fault. Men and women together share the blame here, and women need to improve their moral lives. And sometimes I think that both men and women have inherited from a bad family upbringing the effects of the sexual revolution. For example, I think women very often don't realize their dignity because they've had bad relationships with their fathers. And I think men don't realize their dignity because they've had bad relationships with their mothers, and they've seen their mothers and fathers use each other. So I do think it's a fair point, and I hope I didn't give the impression that it's all men's fault, and that's not true. But I do think that that men have a kind of a primary or a responsibility to take the initiative in starting to fix this and correct this. So anyway, that's my position.
I'd like to give you a response to that. Do you have a response to Father?
Well, yeah, you say man up, and that's the thing. That's the whole point. Like Okanuju is saying, the Western women, they're rejecting that ideal of a good man who protects them. They're going after the rotten stuff, pleasure. I mean, look around. The divorce rate is caused, the majority of divorces are caused by women. I mean, they're the ones rejecting it. A lot of men are offering it, but they're rejecting it.
Yeah,
go ahead,
again, I don't... It's hard for me to make a judgment about, you know, general, you know, statistical trends or things like that. You know, if I were to say, well, look, if a man's protecting a woman and doing what he should if he's being ideal and virtuous, I think it's less likely that a woman's going to divorce him if he's really being ideal. I do think that there's ways in which men can think that they're doing something where they're taking the leadership and taking initiative, but they can be controlling sometimes. And so I think a lot of women would make that counterclaim. They would say the reason why I initiated the divorce is not because my husband's being protective of me, but because he's controlling me or something. So I don't want to play the blame game where it's like it's really this or really that. I think that both sides have to take a good look at the effects of the sexual revolution, the effects of saying that sex is about pleasure and not about procreation, and both of them taking responsibility to love each other and to care for each other. So I'd rather not. It seems like a fruitless exchange to sort of say, well, it's predominantly women's fault or something like that. It seems to me we just have to say, look, each individual who's listening today, whether you're a man or a woman, look in your heart and say, what can I do differently and better? That's all. I'm speaking from a man's perspective, so I feel like I'm a little bit better at saying, I feel like I know what I can tell another man to do to help this situation. So maybe that's why I've been, speaking that way a little bit. So,
Ray, I really appreciate your call, and I hope we didn't give you short shrift. We do have to move on, but thank you for that, for kind of giving us a little bit of a corrective, because it can, I think, sound like we're just saying men have gone bad. But it is true that Pope Paul VI in Humanae Vitae said if you separate procreation and sex, essentially, then you're going to end up with people just not respecting one another anymore. It's pretty hard to look at the world today and say, "Nah, he was wrong about that." Let's see if we can get Patrick from Rockwell, Texas, in real quick before we have to go. Patrick, your question for Father.
Hi. My question is, what level of authority kind of does Humanae Vitae hold? Is it simply a doctrinal teaching of the Church? Is it considered an infallible teaching because it was given by the Pope?
Excellent question.
Is it a dogma? Like where is
it? Yeah, absolutely.
Kind of
great. I would say this: there are different levels of magisterium, as they say. That's a technical term, but for official teaching, the Church teaches this, that when the same teaching has been authoritatively proposed over several pontificates and by church councils in several instances, then that teaching becomes ordinary magisterium. That's slightly different than the concept of authentic magisterium. Authentic magisterium can be done by one pope. Ordinary magisterium is done by a series of pontiffs over the course of a long period, for example. And therefore, it would have the status of an infallible teaching. A lot of people think that Humanae Vitae was kind of the new first time this was ever considered, but the Church had considered contraception from the beginning. Both abortion and contraception had been something that had been practiced in ancient cultures up until the modern time. It's just we have better technology at it. But, I mean, potions to prevent conception, those things were in existence for quite some time, and maybe not quite as effective as they are today. But the Church had definitive teachings about those things from the very early periods of the Church. And then since Humanae Vitae, of course, you've had a constant reaffirmation, both with John Paul II, and Familiaris Consortio, for example, and then Pope Benedict XVI, there's been constant reaffirmations over those pontificates as well. So with regard to the specific question of the use of the contraceptive pill that was brought up in Humanae Vitae, so it seems to me that it's ordinary magisterium and therefore infallible, not by an extraordinary act of the magisterium, not because there was an ex cathedra pronouncement by a single pope, but rather because of the ordinary teaching of this over the course of several pontificates. So,
and that is where we will leave it. Patrick, thank you so much for that call. We will take more opportunities throughout the course of the year to continue discussing the Humanae Vitae. Father Sebastian Walsh, thank you so much for a very fine hour.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you so much, Sai. God bless you. And a blessing to everyone. Let me give a little blessing to all the people, especially young families who are struggling mightily to bring new life in the world. Almighty God bless you through the intercession of Mary and Joseph and keep you strong in your families in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen. Thank you again, Father, and thank you so much for your blessing. Next hour, Jimmy Akin's going to be here, and it's last call for open forum questions this week. Yeah, we got a special open forum coming up, and it's a good way to, for me to end my very difficult one-day work week this week to get to spend an hour with Jimmy Akin. We'll be right back with that after this on Catholic Answers Live.